After Vidura had traveled for so many years on pilgrimage, more than 30 years, and then finally Krishna and the Yadu dynasty has left this world, and then Vidura meets Uddhava in Gurgaon, or around that area of central North India, by the bank of the Jamuna, and Uddhava has just come from seeing Krishna. He is practically speaking the last person to see Krishna during his presence in this world. And Krishna instructed him. And Maitreya Muni also came at that time by the arrangement of Krishna. Just imagine seeing Krishna just before he's going to leave, and then him leaving, and then you understanding that there is no chance of you seeing him further in this life. And after having that association, how wonderful. So Uddhava was feeling so much separation from Krishna. He was going to Badrikashram because Krishna had instructed him to go there, to associate with and give instructions or pass on the instructions that Krishna gave him to the great sages there, and to associate with Narayan Rishi, whose deity is in Badrikashram. And actually there is also a deity of Uddhava there now too. So Vidura met Uddhava and their meeting was ecstatic. Although Vidura knew that Krishna had left and the Yadu dynasty had left because he had just passed through Prabhachetra, still he asked Uddhava, what is the news? What is the news about Krishna? What is the news about each and every member of the Yadu dynasty and the Pandavas, and especially Krishna? And Uddhava began his reply saying, how can anyone say there's good news after Krishna has left this world? And then he began remembering. But even before that, before saying anything, he went into ecstasy remembering Krishna. And then he began speaking about Krishna's pastimes, just being immersed in remembrance of Krishna. Because in that remembrance of Krishna, Krishna was actually present due to his purity and due to Krishna's absolute nature. So after recounting the pastimes in Vrindavan, Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, and recounting Krishna's pastimes outside of Vrindavan, Uddhava then remembers how he himself had met Krishna, and as Krishna was in his forum form just preparing to leave this world, and Krishna said, it was I who instructed Brahma in the Padmakalpa, which we had heard about just in the second canto. And Uddhava said, please give me those instructions. I don't want anything else other than to be absorbed always in your devotional service. Please tell me what you told Brahma. And Krishna spoke to him primarily, even though the senior great sage Maitreya Muni was right there. And Maitreya Muni at that time heard everything. And by hearing Krishna's words to Uddhava, Maitreya Muni understood that what he had previously conceived of being the highest truth, meaning jnana, or becoming one with the Supreme, that was not the highest truth. Rather, what was higher than that, the supreme destination, was to understand one's eternal relationship with Krishna and go and live in that loving devotional service in the spiritual world. Goloka Vrindavan or Vaikuntha. So Maitreya Muni became a great devotee at that time, having heard directly from Krishna at the time Krishna was instructing Uddhava. So when Uddhava told this to Vidura, and Vidura replied by saying, please give me the instructions. Please tell me, great souls such as yourself, they wander the world just out of their compassion to enlarge the river of Krishna Katha, because it is only that river of the pastimes of Krishna that gives life to people within the desert of the material world. So Vidura said, "You great souls are wandering just to do this. Please be merciful to me and tell me what Krishna spoke to you." And Uddhava replied that you please go and hear it from Maitreya Muni, because he is senior to me, and you are senior to me. You're as old as my father, and he is also senior. So it is better that you hear from him. And then they spent the whole night talking about Krishna, and the night passed as if a moment. And then the next day, Uddhava left for Badrikashram to fulfill the instruction of Krishna, and Vidura left for Haridwar followed the Ganga northward to Haridwar, which is really, if you're going to Badrikashram, I think that's, one goes that way also. So there, Vidura met Maitreya Muni. Sukadeva Goswami said, text 1, Vidura, the best amongst the Kuru dynasty, who is perfect in devotional service, and it's interesting, Prabhupada in the purport defines what that perfection of devotional service is. Do you know what it is? I think it's achyuta bhava siddhi. That being always absorbed in devotional service of the Lord. Achyuta bhava. Always thinking about achyuta. Always thinking about Krishna. That is what perfection is. And always thinking about service to Krishna, Krishna's mission. That is what perfection is. Just that absorption in Krishna. So Vidura was perfect, and Maitreya Muni was also so exalted as well. So thus, Vidura reached the source of the celestial Ganges River at Haridwar, where Maitreya, the great fathomless learned sage of the world, was seated. Vidura, who was perfect in gentleness and satisfied in transcendence, inquired from him, Maitreya Muni. So both of them were perfect. Vidura said, "O great sage, everyone in this world engages in fruitive activities to attain happiness, because everyone is looking for happiness, and according to what one's conception is of what will bring one happiness, one looks in that particular place. So most people think that fruitive activities will bring them happiness. And what are fruitive activities? Activities that will bring fruit that we can enjoy. So everyone is a fruitive worker, a karmi. One who is working not for the sake of the work. The work isn't inherently satisfying in and of itself, but working to get something else that will come later as a product of their work. So everyone in this world engages in fruitive activities to attain happiness. But one finds neither satiation nor the mitigation of distress." So one neither becomes satisfied, nor do one's miseries go away. On the contrary, one is only aggravated by such activities, because you're working so hard and they don't bring you what you want, nor do they remove what you don't want. So therefore, Vidura asks, "Maitreya, please therefore give us directions on how one should live if one wants real happiness, actual happiness." So Prabhupada explains in the purport that Vidura is asking this for the benefit of the common man, actually, because he knows the answer to these questions. He knows that That one can't actually know Krishna, develop one's relationship with Krishna until one gives up this mentality of fruit of work. Two things have to be given up. Jnana karma anavrita. The mentality of fruit of activity has to be given up. That I'm going to work to get something. Rather, in Krishna consciousness, if one wants to attain the association of Krishna, one doesn't work to get something, but one gets that thing or serves Krishna through his work and is absorbed in a chutta bhava, service to Krishna, and that work itself is devotional service, and in that work itself, Krishna is actually there. If one's consciousness is correct, then that's Krishna consciousness. So the fruit of mentality has to be given up, and the last word of fruit of mentality is the mentality of becoming one with Krishna. This is jnana, jnana. So both these mentalities have to be given up to attain Krishna. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, in illusion, one thinks that he can be happy only by fruit of activity. The whole world is moving under this. What? The politicians get elected on what? Being able to provide what? Jobs. So that people can work. So that they can get their sense gratification, which is equated with their happiness through their work. So people think, an illusion, people think that they can be happy only by fruit of activities. But what actually happens is that one becomes more and more entangled in the network of action and reaction and does not find any solution to the problem of life. There is a nice song in this connection. So we have songwriters and musicians. You can imagine standing up before your pop audience and singing this song. Because of a great desire to have all happiness in life, I built this house. Do, do, do. But unfortunately, the whole scheme has turned to ashes. Bam, bam, bam. Because the house was unexpectedly set on fire. Room. The law of nature, that's the end of the quote, the song. The law of nature is like that. Everyone tries to become happy by planning in the material world. But the law of nature is so cruel that it sets fire to one's schemes. The fruit of worker is not happy in his schemes, nor is there any satiation of his continuous hankering for happiness. So he says, please, how can we really become happy? Oh my Lord, great philanthropic souls travel on the earth on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to show compassion to the fallen souls who are averse to the sense of subordination to the Lord, which is more or less everyone. Krishna bhule se jivana divahi mukh. We turn our back on Krishna. Not only we have turned our back on Krishna, but we continuously turn our back on Krishna. We are averse to the sense of subordination to Krishna. Rather, we are envious of Krishna. Rather, we want to act as the independent and supreme. So the devotees of the Lord, they're traveling all over the world just to be compassionate and to tell people, don't look for your happiness in the wrong place. Please look to Krishna for your happiness, to Krishna's service. So Prabhupada explains in his purport, great unalloyed devotees of the Lord are compassionate towards the fallen, and therefore they travel all over the world with the mission of bringing souls back to Godhead, back to home. Such pure devotees of the Lord carry the message of Godhead in order to deliver the fallen souls, and therefore the common man who is bewildered by the influence of the external energy of the Lord should avail himself of their association. But people in general have no time. They have no inclination, and because they have no inclination, they have no time. So we can see what Vidura is doing. He's approaching Maitreya and saying that here are my questions. I want to hear about Krishna, Uddhava. You have just heard from Krishna. Uddhava has sent me to you. And great souls, they travel just to be compassionate. I'm asking you to be compassionate upon me. Please tell me. And he's going to gradually tell his questions. Therefore, O sage, please give me instructions. Now listen to this, what he's asking for. Please give me instruction on the transcendental devotional service of the Lord. So instruct me in devotional service of the Lord so something will happen. So instruct me in the devotional service of the Lord so that he who is situated in the heart of everyone, who is situated in the heart of everyone? Krishna. So instruct me in devotional service so that Krishna, who is in everyone's heart, can be pleased to impart from within knowledge of the absolute truth in terms of the ancient Vedic principles, which are delivered only to those who are purified by the process of devotional service. So please, he's asking, instruct me in devotional service so I can become purified, so that Krishna in my heart will be inclined to instruct me. Because, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, he quotes the Dhammi Buddhi Ogam Tam, that Krishna, Tesham Satatayuktanam Bhajatam Pratipurvakam, when one is purified in the heart, what will one be like? One will be engaged in Bhajatam, serving Krishna with great priti. Continuously serving Krishna with great loving devotion. And then, through devotional service, through having that, then the Dhammi Buddhi Ogam Tam, then Krishna instructs such a devotee from within and gives him all the guidance required to go further and further and further. So that is what Uddhava is asking for. Prabhupada explains in the purport, by devotional service only does one's heart become completely purified from all material coverings like karma, jnana, and yoga. These are all coverings over the heart. And therefore he's asked, that please tell me how to really become happy. That means not with these things. Only in such a purified stage, if one has no other desires in the heart, does the Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart, with the individual soul, does he give instructions so that the devotee can reach the ultimate destination of going back home, back to Godhead? This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Satatayuktanam Bhajatam. Only when the Lord is satisfied with the devotional service of the devotee, does he impart knowledge, as he did for Arjuna and Uddhava. The jnanis, yogis, and karmis cannot expect this direct cooperation of the Lord, nor do they believe in such service to the Lord. The bhakti process, as performed under the regulative principles of vaidhi bhakti, or devotional service following the prescribed rules and regulations, is defined by the revealed scriptures and confirmed by great acharyas. This practice can help the neophyte devotee to rise to the stage of raga bhakti, in which the Lord responds from within as the Chaitya Guru or the spiritual master as superconsciousness. So the facility to have Krishna instruct one doesn't come to the karmis because they have so many material desires, so many coverings of passion and ignorance in the form of material desires, and it doesn't, nor does it come to the jnanis, even though they are in the mode of goodness, because they have the mayic attachment to want to become one with the Lord. So they don't, because they have no devotion, Krishna doesn't instruct them. O great sage, the Dura continues, kindly narrate how the personality of Godhead, so he's asking his questions, who is independent, desireless Lord of the three worlds, and the controller of all energies. So how does this Lord accept incarnations, and create the cosmic manifestation with perfectly arranged regulative principles for its maintenance. How does He create and maintain? How does the Lord create and maintain this material world, although He has no desires? When we create something, we create a house, or create a family, or we create some wealth, or we create this project or that project, we do so because we have desires that are unsatisfied, and this will satisfy our desires. But Krishna is desireless, so why does He create? Does He desire to get something from His creation of the material world? And the answer is obviously not. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that his creation of the material world is more like the king's creation of the prison house. It's not that he wants to create the prison house. He doesn't have any desire to create the prison house, but why does he create it? There's a need, and his desire is to help those who have a criminal mentality, and also to separate those who have a criminal mentality from those who have an honest mentality. Because those who have a criminal mentality simply cause trouble for those who have the honest mentality. So anyway, Vidura is asking about this, about Krishna's creating the cosmos, and he's also asking about how does Krishna enter into the cosmos as the incarnations. So this has already been spoken about in the second canto, and here in the third canto, Maitreya is going to speak about similar topics again, but from slightly different points of view. Then in the sixth verse he asks about how does he expand himself to create the material world. He's obviously not an ordinary living entity. The Lord is not, nor therefore we can never become the Supreme. Tell me, you may also narrate about the auspicious characteristics of the Lord in His different incarnations for the welfare of the twice-born, the cows, and the demigods. Our minds are never satisfied completely, although we continuously hear of His transcendental activities. So the incarnations, he's asking to hear about the incarnations which come for the benefit of the cows, the twice-born, and the demigods. Interesting assortment. Prabhupada explains them one by one why he comes for each of those. And then he explains towards in the second third of the purport. The Lord's pastimes for the protection of the twice-born civilized men, the cows and demigods, are all transcendental. No matter why he comes, everything he does is transcendental beyond matter. No influence or touch of the three modes of material nature. Everything is above it and fully transcendental and fully wonderful. A human being is inclined to hear good narrations and stories, and therefore there are so many books, magazines, and newspapers on the market to satisfy the interests of the developed soul. But the pleasure in such literature, after it is read once, becomes stale, and people do not take any interest in reading such literatures repeatedly. In fact, newspapers are read for less than an hour and then thrown in the dustbin as rubbish. The case is similar with all other mundane literatures, but the beauty of transcendental literatures like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is that they never become old. They have been read in the world by civilized man for the last 5,000 years, and they have never become old. They are ever fresh. To whom? To the learned scholars and devotees. Even by daily repetition of the verses of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no satiation for devotees like Vidura. Vidura might have heard the pastimes of the Lord many, many times before he met Maitreya, but still he wanted the same narrations to be repeated because he was never satiated by hearing them. That is the transcendental nature of the Lord's glorious pastimes. He continues asking, so please tell me about the Lord's, His incarnations, how He creates this world. I want to hear, I want to hear, I want to hear. The Supreme King of all kings has created different planets and places of habitation where living entities are situated in terms of the modes of nature and work. And He has created their different kings and rulers. Now He's asking about not only the incarnations and not only the process of the Lord creating and maintaining the world, how and why He does this, but how about the inhabitants of the world and those who rule them? I want to hear about this. Please also describe how Narayan, the creator of the universe and the self-sufficient Lord, how He has differently created the natures, the activities, the forms, the features, and the names of the different living creatures. So this is what's going to be discussed in the next chapters. How the different living entities became created. Did everyone evolve from monkeys? Is that the process that Krishna used? We'll find out, but I'll give you a hint that the answer is no. We did not evolve from monkeys. Somewhere I read recently that they found some fish near Indonesia that is... It's not, they didn't think it was extinct, but there was, they don't see them very often. And so in other words, they were saying that this fish, this kind of fish, was... they thought, a while ago, they thought that he had been extinct for thousands of years. And then they find him in existence again. So this is a point that Prabhupada makes, that all the species are always in existence. It's not that one evolves from the next, and then they die out because there's one who has a further ability to survive. No. Where does how does the peacock have a further ability to survive because he has beautiful feathers? Ridiculous. Well, these creatures, all the different species are created very, very specifically. So how? They're different, so many different varieties. How and when are they created? How are they ruled? So many different things like that. So he's asking about all this. But now he starts getting to the point. I want to hear all these things. And Prabhupada actually had explained in the purport that he wanted to hear about Krishna. But he was a little shy to directly ask about Krishna. So he's asking indirectly. And now he comes to what he wants to hear about. Oh my Lord, I have repeatedly heard about these higher and lower statuses of human society from the mouth of Vyasadeva, and I am quite satiated with all these lesser subject matters and their happiness. They have not satisfied me with the nectar topics about Krishna. Tesham rite Krishna katam rito gna. I've already heard about these topics. I've heard from Vyasadeva, I've read the Mahabharata that tells about these different things, but yet I'm asking you, because I want to hear about these things now, in relationship directly with Krishna. Because if things are directly connected with Krishna, if topic is directly connected with Krishna, they have life, they have spiritual potency. And Prabhupada explains this in the purport. The story of the battle of Kurukshetra may be interesting for the mass of people. But to a person like Vidura, who is highly advanced in devotional service, only Krishna Katha, and that which is dovetailed with Krishna Katha, is interesting. Vidura wanted to hear everything from Maitreya, and so he inquired from him. But he desired that all the topics be in relationship with Krishna. Because there is a way to explain about the creation of the material world There's a way to explain about the rulers of the material world. There are ways to explain about the different population and the nature and the forms and the personalities of the different creatures in the material world. There are so many ways to explain these things. But he wants to hear them. Vidura wants to hear them only in such a way that connect these things with Krishna. Because on one side, everything is connected with Krishna. There is nothing separate from Krishna. So he wants to hear everything in such a way that he'll be reminded of their connection with Krishna, because he wants to remember Krishna and he's not interested in a lesser happiness, because there are so many different levels of happiness in this world. There's the sensual, the intellectual, the mental, the emotional. And then there is the spiritual, and there's different levels of spiritual happiness. But he specifically wants Krishna Katha, because he wants to be connected with this higher form of happiness, the highest form of happiness. He's made up, he has his own taste by now. And he wants to hear everything in relationship with Krishna and has no interest in hearing things not connected with Krishna. As fire is never satisfied in its consumption of firewood, so a pure devotee of the Lord never hears enough about Krishna. Historical events and other narrations concerning social and political incidents all become transcendental as soon as they are in relationship with Krishna. That is the way to transform mundane things into spiritual identity. The whole world can be transformed into Vaikuntha if all worldly activities are dovetailed with Krishna Katha. There are two important Krishna Kathas current in the world, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavad Gita is Krishna Katha because it is spoken by Krishna, whereas Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna Katha because it narrates about Krishna. So all the different Krishna Kathas in the Bhagavatam, they are of different varieties. In the early cantos of the Bhagavatam, there's much about creation and how Krishna is the sarva karana karanam. He is the cause of the creation, the cause of all causes. And then finally, the incarnations are described. And finally, in the 10th canto, Krishna's activities, his own leela, his own activities are described. Not Krishna's activities in relationship with the material energy, taking the material energy and spiritualizing it by connecting it to Krishna. No, in the 10th canto, the transcendental leelas of Krishna themselves it describes. So Bhagavatam is Krishna Katha because it narrates about Krishna. Lord Chaitanya advised all his disciples to preach Krishna Katha all over the world without discrimination, because the transcendental value of Krishna Katha can purify one and all from material contamination. So now, in the next verses, starting with that verse, after asking his questions, Vidura is bringing it to the point of Krishna Katha again and again. Who in human society can be satisfied without hearing sufficient talk of the Lord, whose lotus feet are the sum total of all places of pilgrimage, and who is worshipped by great sages and devotees? Such topics can cut off one's bondage to family affection simply by entering the holes of one's ears. Prabhupada explains in the purport that that passion and ignorance bind one to the bodily concept of life. And the bodily concept of life bind us to fruitive activities, activities that entangle us in further material bodies and further debts. So, passion and ignorance do that, and the mode of goodness can lead us to impersonal realization. But these, still, all of these really will keep us in the material world. But Krishna Katha is the only remedy for all the people of the world because it can situate one in pure consciousness of the self and liberate one from material bondage. So beyond goodness, passion, and ignorance, beyond the activities of karmis, beyond the activities of yogis, beyond the activities of impersonalist jnanis, talk about Krishna, especially if one is pure, brings one in full contact with Krishna himself, which is beyond everything of the material world and every subordinate spiritual realization as well. So it is the only remedy for all the people of the world, because it can situate one in pure consciousness of the self and liberate one from material bondage. To preach Krishna Katha all over the world, as recommended by Lord Chaitanya, is the greatest missionary activity. And all sensible men and women of the world may join in this great movement started by Lord Chaitanya. It is the movement for Krishna Katha. So he continues. Vidura continues now, still telling him what he wants. He's begging him to please tell me about Krishna. Your friend, the great sage, Krishna Dwapayana Vyas, has already described the transcendental qualities of the Lord in his great work, the Mahabharata. But the whole idea is to draw the attention of the mass of people to Krishna Katha, Bhagavad Gita, through their strong affinity for hearing mundane topics. For one who is anxious to engage constantly in hearing such topics, Krishna Katha gradually increases his indifference towards all other things. Such constant remembrance of the lotus feet of the Lord, of Lord Krishna, by the devotee who has achieved transcendental bliss, vanquishes all his miseries without delay. So in the beginning of this chapter, he has said, Maitreya Vidura has said, that the materialists are trying so hard through their material activities to become happy and to remove their distress, but to no avail through fruitive activities. And now he's giving the methodology for actually accomplishing that which cannot be accomplished by materialistic activities. And that methodology is by hearing about Krishna. And Prabhupada keeps adding in the purport, and preaching about Krishna. Shravanam Kirtanam Smaranam Vishnu Palasevanam. Read that verse again, it is so nice. For one who is anxious to engage constantly in hearing such topics, Krishna Katha, this is the effect. And the same thing has been said in the first canto, Srinivatam Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Vidhyanta Stoya Badrani Vidunati Sritsatam. That if one becomes anxious to hear about Krishna, gradually, he becomes indifferent towards all other things. Such constant remembrance of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna by the devotee who has achieved transcendental bliss vanquishes all his miseries without delay. So the fire of the happiness of the association of Krishna that comes from hearing Krishna Katha immediately burns to ashes all miseries, immediately. Prabhupada explains in the purport. The Shraddhadhana, or faithful devotee, can actually derive all the benefits of Bhagavad Gita because by his omnipotency of the Lord, by the omnipotency of the Lord, he achieves the transcendental bliss which vanquishes attachment and nullifies all concomitant material miseries. Only the devotee, by his factual experience, can understand the import of this verse spoken by Vidur. The pure devotee of the Lord enjoys life by constantly remembering the lotus feet of the Lord by hearing Krishna Katha. For such a devotee, there is no such thing as material existence. What does that mean? It means that by always hearing Krishna Katha, even though he appears to be in the material world, he is not in the material world. He is with Krishna. For such a devotee, there is no such thing as material existence. And the much advertised bliss of Brahmananda is like a fig for the devotee who is in the midst of a transcendental ocean of bliss. O sage, so very often when something is glorified and then the opposite is told, one who doesn't, this it's a glorification by negation. If one doesn't do this, what is the situation? So how wonderful it is, we've heard how wonderful it is to hear Krishna Katha, but what if one doesn't? O sage, persons who because of their sinful activities are averse to the topics of transcendence. So, actually, here's the first point. What makes one averse or not interested in hearing about Krishna? It's sinful activities. The heart is covered. So such people, they are thus ignorant of the purpose of the Mahabharata, Bhagavad Gita. They are pitied by the pitiable. I also pity them because I see how the duration of life is spoiled by eternal time, while they involve themselves in presentations of philosophical speculation, theoretical ultimate goals of life, and different modes of rituals. O Maitreya, O friend of the distressed, the glories of the Supreme Lord can alone do good for people all over the world. Therefore, just as bees collect honey from flowers, kindly describe the essence of all topics, the topics of the Lord. Please speak about Krishna. Please tell me about Krishna. I've asked you so many questions. Please connect them all with Krishna because I want to hear about Krishna and I don't want to hear about anything not connected with Krishna. And therefore, text 16, kindly chant all those superhuman transcendental activities of the Supreme Controller, the Personality of Godhead, who accepted incarnations fully equipped with all potency for the full manifestation and maintenance of the cosmic creation. So now this question is pointing directly towards the creation of the world, which he has, of the universe of the Purusha avatars, which he has asked about. That was practically his first question. How did the Lord manifest the material world? How does he enter into it in incarnations, and then about the population. These are the basic questions. How are they ruled? What are their forms, qualities, names, etc.? These are the basic questions he's asked. Please tell me these, and tell me them, please, in relationship with Krishna. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Yeah, sure.
What is text 16?
Yeah.
So it seems to be saying that because the dual is overwhelmed, Krishna has passed away, therefore he asked him to speak about the Lord and his incarnations and his Purusha avatars. So how would that be, with this grief?
Because there's another reason too. The Prabhupada says later in the purport, because he was suggesting you talk from this part, because Maitreya didn't know exactly where to begin. Thank you. But the idea is that when the devotee hears about the Purusha avatars, he doesn't see them or think of them or hear them as separate from Krishna. It's like the super soul is Krishna within the heart. He may be in the form, in this form or that form, but it is Krishna. So when the devotee, due to his love, sees or hears about anything, he only sees Krishna. That's tavamam dagamam dekina deki taramoti savatra haya nija ishta deva spoti. What to speak of the, that's even material manifestations, what to speak of the wonderful Purusha avatars. When one thinks about the Purusha avatars, that makes him understand, that makes him even more amazed by Krishna's own Leela. Because the Supreme Lord, this is in the month of Dhammaraya, one sees how the Lord is overwhelmed, His majesty, His power is overwhelmed by the devotion of Mother Yasoda. So that awareness of who the Lord actually is makes one more aware of the power of bhakti. Of course, on a different level, it's higher not to be aware, but that is really on a different level. So when he's hearing about, when Vidura is hearing about and asking about this, he will be hearing it about Krishna. He must be. Or used.
Does that mean he's asking for the benefit of one track, in one sense?
The element of his shyness and his being overwhelmed. So how his mentality is exactly working, I can't say, but that mentality has caused him to want to be somewhat indirect in his inquiry and hear the response. Yeah.
It was mentioned that here in Krishna's pastimes, including Adar, they reduce the miseries of material existence. So is there another qualification of the person? Hundreds of millions of people they're hearing.
I didn't exactly say that. Because of their sinful activities, people are adverse to the topics of transcendence and are thus ignorant of the purpose of Mahabharata. And then, and before that, your friend the great sage, Krishna Vyasadeva, has already described the transcendental qualities of the Lord in his great work, the Mahabharata. But the whole idea is to draw the attention of the mass of a people to Krishna Katha, Bhagavad Gita. So the purpose of the Mahabharata isn't exactly Krishna Katha, and it's not at all on the same level as the Bhagavatam. And therefore, Srila Vyasadeva wasn't satisfied even after compiling the Mahabharata and was asked to compile the Bhagavatam, which is directly about Krishna.
So that means that there is an agenda directed by, an agenda in the sense that there is a progressive.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because people aren't interested in Krishna Katha. What are they interested in? Politics and this and that. So therefore the Krishna Katha has been inserted within all the politics and intrigues so that people will read the novel and end up with Krishna. The gem is inserted in there. There's so much morality, and so many different moral principles which are necessary for the running of society are in these books. Yeah.
Considering my background and my lack of solid training in moral principles, leads to the question that is it worthwhile to have some emphasis on those alongside Krishna consciousness?
You mean, should we read the Mahabharata and things like that? Yeah, there's no problem with that.
You meant something else.
Should you be interested in moral principles?
Yeah, we tend to bring Krishna consciousness to the exclusion of...
Hope not. Well, if we do that, we get into trouble. But we don't... Yeah. It doesn't work. Krishna consciousness implies moral principles. If we think that we're beyond moral principles because we're Krishna conscious, we're missing the point. That if you have Krishna consciousness, you have morality. So if you don't have Krishna consciousness, and thinking you do, it certainly doesn't give you the right to act in an immoral way. Arjuna sometimes acted against moral principles, but on the direct order of Krishna. When he killed Karna, for instance. But that was on the direct order of Krishna. But we shouldn't be presumptuous to think that every thought that comes, immoral thought that comes in our mind is being inspired by Krishna. Rather, we have to be very careful because of our improper upbringings. Is that...
Sometimes Srila Prabhupada talks about how any subject when Krishna is present becomes, and he also mentioned that in one of his purports. And he even mentions sometimes like that even a war, if Krishna is present, that story becomes valuable.
Yeah.
So in the Mahabharata, Krishna is present quite a lot.
Have you read it?
No, I haven't read the whole thing. I've read it in some reports.
There's so many other things too, and even when Krishna's there, he has a bit part some of the times. He doesn't have the major part. Because Krishna's pastimes didn't occupy people.
But
consciousness.
Even in the Bhagavatam, we're going through so many things even before we come to the level, like we hear the prayers at the end of this chapter, and they're not even prayers for pure devotional service, they're prayers just for...
But in everything that we read, but everything that we read in the Bhagavatam has much more direct connection with Krishna. The second canto is... It's all about Krishna. The first canto is all about Krishna. The third canto is all about Krishna. But the indirect, when you talk...
Indirect
of the Mahabharata. It's very different. Because one is there's so many stories that don't have anything to do with Krishna in there. And, and there's so much moral principles and things which are good, but that it is not sufficient to satisfy the soul. There's stories, the Pandavas in exile. There's so many stories that Bhima's going and fighting with this Yaksha and Raksha.
But aren't they stories about great devotees? Like we hear the story of Dhruva fighting with the Yakshas.
But if you read the story of Dhruva fighting with the Yakshas, it brings it to the point of Krishna. Everything in the Bhagavatam brings it to the point of Krishna.
So it's not written in such a way to bring us at that point?
The Mahabharata, you're saying? Yet the Bhagavad Gita is put in there. Which is the essence, it is the jewel of the Mahabharata. But it probably if you should read the Mahabharata and then your question will be answered. Yeah, last question.
I don't know if I'm right or not, but I vaguely remember while reading Shrimani speaking about Krishna, he described Krishna as being a plenary expansion of Lord Vishnu.
No.
Is that right?
Where did he say that?
I can't remember.
What book was it?
In the Bhagavatam.
No.
No?
Not that I know of anywhere.
I must correct it.
Either that or you made a mistake. Sometimes even while awake we make mistakes. Anyway, you find it and we'll see. Well, sometimes it'll... There's one part when they want Lord Shiva to drink the ocean of the poison generated from the ocean of milk, and they talk to him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one also has to know what's going on and why it is going on. But generally, until we see it and see what frame of reference is being said, we say that possibly there's some chance that you don't remember exactly correctly.
That Krishna displays qualities that Lord Vishnu doesn't display, and therefore he is the source. I was just wondering why, and maybe he didn't say that, maybe I'm imagining it, but I was just wondering if he did why.
Well, but it's not fair to ask me if you're imagining it. You might not have been, so we'll first decide. And then show me where it is, and then it'll make it easier for me to answer.
There is much other literature available.
Right, but he was saying it's in the Bhagavatam.
No, it's not.
See? I told you.
So much.
It's like, your question is like saying, if the moon was made out of green cheese, just if it is, I know it's not, but if it is, when would be the best time to offer it to Krishna? Okay. So if you could just find it again and show it to me, that would make it simple for me. Because sometimes the mind does play tricks on us.
I can sort of remember what you're saying.
But just show it to me. Just find it in the book.
It's something about Krishna and Arjuna. It was in the same verse of which Krishna is the tenor expansion of Vishnu. So that's all I can remember.
If you'd show it to me, that'll make it easier for me to answer the question. Thank you.
A couple of observations. Do you have 1 minute?
Yes.
Right. First of all, referring back to Radharani's observation where it was meant for Maitreya's benefit, you know, what we were asking. I think it will be stretching it a bit too far to say that it is for the benefit of Maitreya that is being asked. Because Maitreya is a very exalted personality in his own right. You know, and he has heard, I mean, look at his greatness, that when Krishna is leaving, you know, he has been summoned there, you know, by his arrangement. Mm-hmm. And so he takes part into his pastimes, you know, the final pastimes. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't that ordinary that he needs much more benefit after hearing from Krishna himself directly. He doesn't have to hear from anybody else, you see. He's a pure heart anyway. And the second thing is that to say that how we reconcile Vidura's separation and his asking more about Krishna, you see, that there is, in literature, there is a thing called ras, you know. And there is a ras in separation. In fact, there is a greater ras in separation than in meetings. The poets have sung about all that, you know. So, if somebody is a father or brother or anybody dies, everybody joins to her and says, oh, such a nice man, you know, I met him the other day, he did such and such. They just keep on memorizing and they take some sort of satisfaction out of that, you know, remembering it. Similarly, if Vidura is asking about Krishna, you know, even after he has passed, left the planet and he's in separation, listening about him will enhance his rasas. That's just a psychological effect. And it's mentioned in the literature. And the other thing is about Mahabharata. Mahabharata is such a vast, you know, work. And the references about Krishna are very, very minimal in that. It's 150,000 verses. That's the greatest epic work in the whole of mankind's literature. And it's so vast with so many things, all sorts of subjects are discussed in there. Mm-hmm. So it's, Krishna is not predominant there, you know, it's very little reference here.
Okay, thank you.
In reference to the last bit, Vrijan Prabhu, now Mahabharata as it is, but would a fully real, a fully Krishna conscious person be reading the Mahabharata and see Krishna in everything? And therefore that whole thing becomes right. looking to that particular person.
Yeah, but a fully Krishna conscious person, yeah. But it's not the same. Still, it's indirect. There's indirect, more indirect, still more indirect. So there's no doubt in a fully advanced Krishna conscious person, he'll see Krishna's mercy everywhere. Like when Lord Chaitanya was explaining grammar, he was explaining it in relationship to Krishna, with Krishna's names and everything like that. So what could be more dry and boring than grammar? And Lord Chaitanya was seeing Krishna in that. For one who sees me, yomam paschati savatra, for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me. So seeing Krishna where he is not, in one sense, there is no place where he is not. But one who is advanced will see him everywhere. So he'll also see him in the Mahabharata, but it's not the same as the Bhagavatam. And still, even more so, the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam is the most direct. But Krishna is absolute. Again, explain that again.
The fact that Krishna is absolute, it says that the energetic and the energy is non-different. I'm confused. That how would one who's fully Krishna conscious see it? If Krishna being absolute,
the difference is to see it as it will remind you of Krishna in some way, which is no different from Krishna. And then it being Krishna. Just like if you see a shoe of one of your family members, so that will remind you of them. So there's that step. And then if you see the family member, in one sense there's no difference between the two. You've seen the shoe and that reminded you of them, but would you be satisfied just seeing the shoe all the time?
But then how do we understand when the gopis saw Krishna, they were looking for him, but when they got to taste his name, they didn't mind not seeing him because his name...
Say it again.
When the gopis were looking for Krishna and finally they got to love his name, and when they saw him, they weren't dissatisfied in not seeing him because they were so...
Where is that?
You haven't seen anything like that?
No. See, when the gopis were... No. When the gopis, they were calling for Krishna, when Krishna left the arena of the rasa dance, it's not that they went mad thinking about Krishna, but it's not that they were so satisfied that they didn't want to see him anymore. It was just the opposite. The madness, they were seeing Krishna in their madness, but yet at the same time, they weren't satisfied in their madness. They wanted to see him. So these are very subtle points, but the conclusion is that although separation is the same as meeting, but what the devotees don't want separation, they want meeting with Krishna. The purpose of the separation is the meeting. Separation is the methodology that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught to bring us to Krishna. It is the fire that makes the love for Krishna burn. Is that clearer?
Yeah, it's clear. It's just that I find it a little bit difficult to understand the word absolute.
Well, that should be no wonder at this point, because our consciousness is full of dualities. That example of if you see something of your beloved, does that satisfy you? You feel their presence like that when you see, but does that make you want not to see them?
But that is on the physical level.
No, it's not on the. It's on the spiritual level too. The same thing. Just like on Prabhupada's disappearance day, it's coming up. So all the thinking about Prabhupada, and we'll be missing Prabhupada. And in that, Prabhupada will be there. But does that mean that we wouldn't like to be with Prabhupada, but that's better? So it's true, but yet in the absoluteness there's varieties of experience of the person. And when Lord Chaitanya is crying for Krishna, there's different levels that he's meeting Krishna and he's chanting his names, but it's not that he says, oh, I don't need Krishna anymore, because the name is, it's not philosophical. Anyway, that's probably the best I can do to explain it. Okay, unless you're going to answer it, as long as it's...
So the prophecy of the Mahabharata and the Ramayana can be rid of the duties because everything is ideal. So for a liberated person, that particular function he wouldn't require because he'd already be ideal.
Yeah, but I was going to answer like that, but then I thought that someone who is a pure devotee may have to, for some duty reason, be talking about these things. So therefore, while he's doing that, he'll be seeing Krishna in it. But yet, the way that he sees Krishna in that, it doesn't satisfy him in the sense that now I don't have to see Krishna in more direct means. Rather, it whets his appetite for seeing Krishna in more direct means. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam.